Part 2. The Fire That Does Not Burn. Next morning, Kyle picked the stone up off the desk and squinted at it. Didn't look any different from the day before. It was still dark grey, round, smooth, with those two faces, apparently drawn in white streaks. The boy sniffed it, shook it, turned it over, but saw nothing unusual. So he put it back on a pile of surf gear brochures he'd been mooning over yesterday, dreaming he could afford that hot razor light board, a steal at €400. Not. 8 a.m. he was out of the door and trudging into the corner shop where he bought a can of Red Bull and two packets of Buenos, hoping they might perk him up a bit. The newspapers stared out at him from their neat rows above the confectionery. Headlines shouted for his attention. One in particular caught his eye. Mysterious disappearance of local family. Carl peered closer. It said that in a tiny village near Killarney, the police had found four piles of clothes in a kitchen but no sign of the people who'd been living there only the day before. The work of a cult was suspected, or possibly, suggested the article, spontaneous combustion. That's freaky, thought Kyle. The third time this year, too. He looked up to see Mr. O'Neill, who ran the shop huffing and dumping a pile of coloured leaflets into the bin. What's that, then? No well blessing this Sunday, after all. That was all the flyers for it. Why not? Loads of people go every year. They've gone off religion, have they? St. Michael's wells run dry. Haven't you heard? 2 days ago, just like all the others, and no one knows why. Mrs. Mulrooney's ranting mad. She spent all year growing flowers just to decorate it, replied the shopkeeper, scrubbing at a sticky patch on his counter with a scrap of manky grey t-shirt. And Father Robert having to do the whole show in church instead with bottled holy water from Rome in a plastic washing-up bowl, instead of having people standing round the well on the cliff top like always. It's not fitting. Carl couldn't bring himself to mind that much about the church service. He prided himself on not doing religion, apart from when his school frog marched everybody to weekly mass. But yeah, it was odd. No doubt about that. So was last night. He snapped the ring off the Red Bull, downed it in one, then promptly had a coughing fit that lasted all the way to the bus shelter where he and his friends always picked up the school coach. There was no one else there. That was odd too. He'd usually meet Fergal, Mikey and Eof at least. Probably all still asleep. Certainly wished he was. Exhausted, heavy-eyed and seriously grumpy, he had never felt less like going to class in his life. To cap it all, he had a mock GCSE maths today. Well, that was going to bomb. "Busy night," said a voice. Carl looked up. A small man, wearing a stained green hoodie, woolly green beanie hat, with a straggly orange beard, was sitting on the bench right next to him. The boy noticed he had very bright green eyes and was wolfing down a peanut butter junkie like it was the best thing he'd ever tasted in his entire life. Carl blinked and edged away slightly. Where'd he sprung from? "Yeah, you could say that," he muttered, pulling out his phone and going straight to Twitter to discourage further conversation. "Ought to rename it Twatter," he thought sourly, spotting a ranting tweet from some angry teetotaler, insisting that the only way to stop drunken teenagers vomiting in the streets every Saturday night was to up the legal age for buying booze to 21. Immediately. The man had 752 followers, too. No wonder it was so hard to get a decent underage drink in this town. "Been on the batter, have we?" "I have not," answered Kyle shortly. The little man was not discouraged. "Maybe it's that stone," he continued without any particular emphasis. Kyle blinked. "Huh? How did you..." "Those children. Would I be right?" "They need your help." To Kyle's intense relief, the red single-decker coach came lumbering round the corner. "My bus. I've got to go to school. Excuse me." "It's got to be you that does it," called the little man as Carl stumbled up the steps, catching his backpack in the closing doors. Like it or not, you've been chosen, Carl. You won't get any peace now. Obviously, Carl decided, sitting down in the back row with his friends. The little guy was bonkers. But on the other hand, how had he known about that stone? The whole of the rest of that week, the boy had a very trying time. Every single night, the children came to him in his dreams. He'd wake up several times with their faces in his head and a sense of urgency which is getting stronger by the day. That was worrying enough in itself. But when he remembered that Green Hoodie Man had actually called him by his name, he started worrying even more. On the Friday, Carl was slumped at the bus stop with his head in his hands, feeling like he had cotton wool for brains and diving weights for feet. Dear me, you do look rough. The boy looked up. Sure enough, there was the little man again, eyes crinkling with amusement, hoodie dirtier than ever. This time he was eating a banana and swigging from a bottle of strawberry Azu. Breakfast. Best meal of the day, he said cheerfully, indicating his supplies. Now then, let's get down to business. Want to know how to stop all this? Carl briefly considered pretending to have no idea what he was talking about, and then nodded miserably. He felt utterly defeated, and the only thing he really wanted to do was sleep for a week. Grand. Best come with me then. But school? No, I have to. I mean, my mum will go mad if they ring up and say I've bummed off. Never bunked off school before? My, what a good boy. Carl bristled. Well, sure I have. Lots of times. It's just... Well, come on then. What are you waiting for? Turn round three times and each time say rainbow's end. You what? Just do it, okay? On impasse, Carl stood up, folded his arms and shouted. Ah, feck it. Rainbow's end, rainbow's end, rainbow's end. Whoa! The whole landscape quivered, then shifted. When it stabilised again, they were on Ballinskellig Beach in front of its ruined abbey. A double rainbow arched across the sky, over the sea. One end seemed to be slap bang in front of him. Carl boggled. Man, that was cool. That was mental. How did you do it? Little reality wrinkling, nothing to it. Reality wrinkling. If you concentrate hard enough, you can wrinkle up reality like a concertina to be somewhere else immediately. Space-time compression, pure quantum physics. Don't they teach you anything at that school of yours? There was a long pause as Kyle stared at him, still reeling from their abrupt arrival. Who are you, dude? The little man considered. You can call me Marvel, he suggested, like in the comics. Is that really your name? No. Now then, what colours do you see out there? He demanded, pointing at the rainbows arcing before them. Red, yellow, blue, orange, indigo, green, violet. Everyone knows that. Exactly. We're being shown seven colours. That means seven tasks. Then the magic can come in. Freeing people from stone enchantments isn't easy. It takes time, skill and courage. I've got the skill, but we need your courage and your time. Let's hope you've got them. Or I'm telling you, now you're mixed up in this, you'll never get a good night's sleep again. Okay. You've got me, mumbled Carl, running his hands through his thick black hair so it stuck out all over the place like a hedgehog. I'll do your tasks, whatever. I will do anything you like if those kids will just go away and leave me alone. But what do they want? And like, who are they anyway? Let's just say those two children have something Ireland is badly in need of. All the background I get. For now. Recite the colours again, one at a time. Each represents something you need to find to unleash the magic. Begin. Carl glared. Jesus, the mouth on you. All right, red. The lips of a beloved, the blood of a raven, the rage of a wrong man, the glow of cooling iron, Take your pick. I'll have to find one of them and bring it to me. Kyle tugged at the hem of his animal surf hoodie distractedly. This just got weirder and weirder. Red. Lips, beloved. Yeah. Suppose I get one of my mum's red lipsticks. She's beloved. Kind of. Reckon Dad loves her anyway. When she's in a decent mood. The leprechaun, for that was what he was, as you probably twigged by now, nodded briefly. That would do at a pinch. Next. Yellow. The little man closed his eyes thoughtfully. The earring of a pirate. The wedding band of a new married man. A drop of honey from Queen Bee's own larders. Dust beams in the sunshine. Well, no pirates round here unless you count Fat Boy Pirates Rap Club down in Dingle, and that's a right dive. No new married bloke is going to give me his wedding ring, no way. Maybe the honey. That all comes from the Queen Bee's larders, right? Marvel inclined his head briefly. Well, we've got a bit of honeycomb from the health shop at home. How about a piece of that? Adequate. Next colour. Green. Marvel grinned. Snot of an orc. Shoe of an elf. Tears of a frog, tongue of a lizard, toe jam of a giant, fart juice of a troll. There are orcs and trolls round here. You're kidding me, right? Have you been up there? Alone? At night? Retorted Marvel, indicating the dark mountains across the water. Carl shook his head. Orcs? Giants? Why not? Today he would not have been surprised to find Darth Vader, Batman and Gollum sitting on his bed playing poker when he got home. And what's fart juice? You don't know, trust me, you really don't want to. Well, anything to do with giants, trolls or orcs is out, said Kyle firmly. There is no way I'm cutting out anything's tongue, ever. Look, I threw up when they made me dissect an earthworm in biology, so that takes care of the lizard thing. Tears of a frog... Hey, my little sister Kyra's got a stuffed green cuddly one with kind of silver glitter around its eyes. What if I snipped off a bit of that? That looks like tears. Sort of. Thinking outside the box, smiled Marvel. Not magical in the usual sense, but creative. I like it. Yes. Oh, and best stay clear of troll farts. A stench alone can kill a man. Next. Purple? The heart of a storm. The vanity of royalty. The scent of lilac. The mark of a lightning strike. Maybe I could take an image of the next lightning storm on my phone. Might not be one for ages. Think again. Kyle did so hard. What if I squash some lilac flowers onto a bit of bog paper, you know, so the scent comes out, and bring you that? He suggested eventually. Acceptable. But make it a cotton handkerchief, at least, if you please. Linen's even better. It's a respect thing. Next colour. Blue? Eyes of a blonde newborn. Scales of a week-old mackerel. A sapphire from the necklace of the Tuatha De Danann's queen. And the sparkle of the sea in midsummer. Take your pick. Kyle reflected the baby's eyes were obviously out of the question. A week-old mackerel would stink, and no one had ever proved that the Tuatha De Danann even existed, let alone clapped eyes on the Queen's fabled jewellery. He looked at the water. The rainbows arcing above it were fading, but the sea was blue as a cornflower. How about I bring you some of that? He offered, pointing. Very well. Next. Orange. Heat of a forge. Hair of an Irish redhead, centre of a conch shell, wing of a butterfly. Dad's cousin Sinead works at Techno Heads in Tralee. They must get a few red hair sweepings in there. Would those do? Grand, what useful family connections you have. Carl wondered if he was being sarcastic, but let it go. Better get started then, said Marvel. I get no rest till it's done, so the sooner you finish the better. Can you remember all those things? Lock of ginger hair, blue sea, crushed purple lilac, bit of silver glitter off my sister's stuffed frog, she's going to kill me if she finds out, a piece of yellow honeycomb and my mam's red lipstick, recited Kyle. Doesn't sound like much. All magic involves a measure of improvisation. It's not so much what things are, Marvel assured him. It's what they represent. But haven't you forgotten one? Oh, yeah, Indigo. A sliver of night sky just before dawn. Tongue of a boar gorged on wild blueberries. Burnt metal. The cloak of an Irish king. Oak gorlink. Well, I saw tungsten go that colour in a chemistry experiment at school. Perfect. But they only do it once a year for year eight. You know, it's set fire to metal. So how do I get that? What do you want me to do? Steal some and set fire to it myself? That's the spirit, said Marvel cheerfully. Off you go then. Remember, 7 days, 7 colours, 7 objects. Be sure to do one task each day without fail or this is never going to work. Why not? 7 is a magical number, okay? So 7 times 7 times 7, even more so. 3 being a magical number in itself. Just stick with the numbers. You mess them up, you'll mess everything. Then as Kyle looked at him, the leprechaun began to disappear. Already he could partially see through him. Wait! Where shall I find you? Our usual place. At midnight on the 7th night, and remember, you must have every single item in a watertight container with you. Why watertight? You'll find out. Oh, and bring your board too, boogie, not surf, and stuff for a beach fire. Though now almost invisible, Carl quite distinctly saw him take another swig of milkshake. It's a good job you're a strong swimmer. That sounded ominous. Can you wrinkle me back home then? Asked the boy, rubbing his eyes. Now the adrenaline rush of his first exposure to magic was wearing off, he felt shattered again. And, though he'd sooner have eaten slug pellets than admit it, rather nervous. Don't be lazy, replied Marvel. You've got feet. And he vanished completely into thin, salty air. 2 seconds later, he was back, but just his head. It was floating 5 feet above the ground. Man! Shrieked Carl, his hair standing on end. Don't do that! Sorry, forgot to say you'll need a wetsuit too, grinned the little man. That Roxy one hanging on the back of your dad's garage will do. Have you been snooping round our garage as well? Sputtered the boy. But Marvel had gone again. It was 5 minutes to midnight, 7 days later, and Kyle stood shivering at the bus stop. In one hand, he was clutching the 7 colours of a rainbow items, plus 3 firelighters, a box of cook's matches, and 6 briquettes cut into pieces, all packed into his mum's biggest Tupperware cake box. In the other, he held the strap of his battered boogie board. His dad's wetsuit was slung over his shoulder, and in his fist he clutched a couple of bungee cords. There was no sign of Marvel. None at 10 past, quarter past, or 20 past either. Carl gritted his teeth and turned to leave. Total waste of time. And what was he supposed to do with the stone children now? Chuck them back on the beach? Going somewhere, were we? Came a voice from somewhere down round his ankles, and there stood Marvel, eyes greener than ever, but only 6 inches high. Holy St. Bridget! Yelped Carl, staring at him in disbelief. What happened to you? Apologies for my lateness. Unforeseen circumstances. No, not that! Why are you so... well, so... He caught Marvel's gaze on him, positively daring Carl to mention his height. Compact? Happens sometimes, snapped the leprechaun. Totally random, most inconvenient. Right, he added firmly, clearly not wishing to discuss this further. We'll be off down the beach. I want to ride on your shoulder, mind? The beach gleamed silver in the moonlight, and the darkened sea was looking glass calm. A mile away, the undulating outline of darker dark showed the sacred hills across the water. That's where we're going, said Marvel quietly, pointing straight at them. Those hills? But we've got no boat. Exactly. Boats attract too much attention, see? Need to keep this one below the radar or they'll clock us. That's what your boogie board is for. That and you'll find strong legs. You want me to board you all the way over there? reality check. It's like a whole mile away, maybe two. And another thing. Who's they?
They have no name but very long ears, replied Marvel curtly. So all things considered, it's best we don't talk about them.
Carl grunted, but slipped into his wetsuit, strapped the box to his back with a bungee cord, and waded into the sea, lying belly down on his board as the water reached waist height. The leprechaun perched, rather uncomfortably for both of them, on Carl's head, hanging onto the roots of his hair.
Ow!
Go easy, Willie, that's attached, he muttered, as Marvel took an especially firm grip of his fringe. The next 2 hours were very challenging for the boy, and not in a good way. Carl paddled with his arms and kicked his legs for all he was worth. But as the sea heaved darkly beneath him, he found himself wondering what lay below the surface, something which had never bothered him before, and hoping very much it was not something large, with teeth. Like a big shark, or a medium-sized sea monster, or possibly the legendary black ghost fish of Glenby, or... Oh, stop that, he told himself angrily. Just stop it and focus. But though he paddled and paddled and paddled, he seemed to be getting no nearer to those hills. In fact, was it possible they were actually moving further away? Carl's legs began to feel heavy. He developed a searing cramp in his right calf. His shoulder muscles burned with strain. Then as a wave rolled up and smacked him in the face, he swallowed a gollop of seawater, coughing and coughing with Marvel clinging onto his head for dear life until he thought his throat would burst. When the fit subsided, he just knew he couldn't go any further and lay hopelessly, chin down on his board, wondering how on earth they were going to reach the shore. Any shore. All right, you did your best, conceded Marvel. Time to go warp drive. Hang on. The board lurched, shuddered, and then to Carl's great alarm and everlasting delight, it took off like a speedboat. It hurtled along, the boy clinging on for dear life, reaching the island in minutes where it promptly powered straight out of the sea, shot across the beach, only coming to a crashing halt when it ploughed into a sand dune.
Man, that was...
Mental, smirked Marvel, rolling off Carl's head as the boy staggered stiffly to his feet. Wasn't it? But we'd have still been there this time next week otherwise. Look, you did okay, he added, slapping Carl heartily on the knee, which was about as high as he could currently reach. You tried your very best with positive intent and a willing heart. And that, according to the rules of magic, is often enough.
Carl collapsed onto the sand and then lay there on his back, staring mindlessly at the stars wheeling above him, trying to breathe and wondering if there was any bit of him that didn't hurt.
No time to slug about. Come on, the moon's already setting, urged Marvel, poking him in the ribs. We haven't got that long. Our fire must be burnt out by the sunrise, or we've failed.
What fire? Asked Carl reasonably enough.
The sorcerer's fire we've got to build in order to trigger the magic. What do you think those briquettes were for? Breakfast? Don't just lie there like a stranded cuttlefish. Get up and help me.
Under Marvel's guidance, Carl made a stone circle with 21 beach pebbles, 3 times 7. Around the outside, the leprechaun carefully positioned the 7 rainbow colour objects. First, the red lipstick, then the piece of yellow honeycomb, then the lock of orange hair, then the scrap of green material with silver glitter. Next went Carl's little glass bottle containing some drops of what had been blue summer seawater, now looking clear and rather ordinary, the linen handkerchief with the purple lilac scent, and lastly, a small piece of tungsten burnt violet, blue and silver from Carl having held it with his mum's salad service over the gas ring in their kitchen the previous night. 7 colours, 7 tasks, all done. In the centre of the beach, they made a pile of driftwood bleached dry by the sun, after putting little pieces of briquette underneath it to encourage the flames to catch. Marvel placed the stone, very carefully, in the middle, and snapped his fingers.
Matches!
The fire leapt into life and was soon crackling furiously as yellow-orange flames consumed the wood. Streaks of green, blue, silver and violet began to flicker through it as golden sparks spat high into the air. It looks like a beautiful firework, Carl thought dreamily. What's with the colours? Is that part of the magic? No. Sodium chloride and iodine get left behind when seawater dries out, replied Marvel briskly. They really don't teach you anything at that school, do they? Now then, over to you. Since the stone came into your hands, you must be the one that asks the children to come out. Tell them it is time now. Tell them they are safe. Marvel, we both know you're cracked, but that's verging on the insane. I am not talking to a stone. You have seen the children. You know they're real, so speak to them. You were chosen, although, he muttered almost to himself, St. Patrick alone knows why. I can't. I feel stupid. That may be a reason, but it is not an excuse. Carl looked awkward and hung his head, a mulish expression on his face. Realising he really wasn't going to get anywhere, the leprechaun sighed heavily and sat down cross-legged in front of the fire. As the coloured light played across his face and the sea shifted and murmured in the darkness, he began a song into the night. The voice sounded nothing like his own, so powerful it made the very stones of the beach shake. As Carl watched, the stone began to move and then rolled to and fro in the heart of the fire, which was beginning to burn lower. The leprechaun crouched and watched it intently for a moment and then barked. Bring more wood. We need more heat. More fire. The boy scuttled about looking for extra driftwood. He found several pieces and was just picking up a large bunch of dry seaweed for good measure when he heard Marvel shout. Hurry! Hurry! It's going out. If the flames die, the children die too. Suddenly afraid, the boy came racing back, slipping and stumbling in the deep, soft sand to hurl a lot onto the dying fire. Instantly it flared up, blazing blue, saffron and green, sending bright streaks of pink in every direction. At intervals, the original colours of the flames, red, yellow and orange, would ignite, and then blue, green and purple flashes would streak through the dark. More and more and more colour came until the blaze looked like an incandescent ball of rainbow light. This can't just be salt and iodine, thought Kyle, entranced, for the flames were growing bigger by the moment. Soon they had enveloped the entire beach, wrapping Kyle and Marvel in a burning haze of colour which flashed and glowed all around them, yet did not burn them. The enchanted fire reached its height inside the stone, the eyes of Geraldo and Madrigal flickered open, and the dense, freezing confinement of rock that had trapped them began to warm, and then to melt. The children started moving. At first this felt like pushing through lightly packed soil, then kind of thick honey, then running water, until suddenly they stumbled forwards out of the fire to land sprawling on their faces on the sand. The leprechaun, back to his full height now, helped them up and dusted them off. Welcome back, little ones, he said formally. You have long been away. Chase us alive, was the best Carl could manage in a very small voice. The children shook themselves, yawned and rubbed their faces. They clutched each other's hands, their eyes flickered all around, and they looked nervous, as if waking from a bad dream that had felt far too real. Next, they began to stretch and wriggle their shoulders. As they discovered they could move freely once more, the anxiety left their faces. Geraldo jumped up and down experimentally. Madrigal broke into a few swaying dance steps and began to spin around and around with her arms held out wide. They examined their own hands, waggled their feet, touched each other's hair and began to laugh and laugh, hugging each other breathlessly. We're back! Woohoo! We're back! Finally, they threw their arms around Marvel. Thank you, they beamed, tears in their eyes. Thank you. Thank you. Oh, thank you. Next, they came towards Kyle. Geraldo hugged his left shoulder hard, and Madrigal kissed his right cheek as they passed lightly on either side of him. "And now what?" asked Marvel, smiling broadly, regarding them with one eyebrow raised as they stood behind Kyle. "We have to go. It feels like there's work to do," replied Geraldo. "Work that has waited 700 years. We could do stuff before, you know, all sorts of good stuff. But after your rainbow far, I think we could do even more now." "Indeed," agreed the leprechaun. "Of that I have no doubt. But, forgive an old man for being nosy, but what sort of work did you have in mind?"
"Yeah, things have been getting pretty whacked out round here," added Kyle eagerly. "Dried up sacred springs, people disappearing. Can you two sort us out then?"
Geraldo shrugged. "Not sure yet, but we'll do our best. Come on, Madrigal. Something tells me it's this way." And with that, and with more grateful smiles, they took each other's hands again and began walking away down the beach. Their hair gleamed red and silver in the light of the rising dawn.
"Is that it? I mean, do you need to... can we do anything else for you?" called out Kyle to their departing backs.
Both turned.
"Well, breakfast would be good. We've had nothing to eat for 700 years, replied Madrigal with a grin. "But don't worry, we'll find ourselves something."
And with that, they waved cheerfully and continued to walk away towards the hills that sloped down to the beach. Now the faintest of early morning lights was blooming on the eastern horizon. Kyle was able to see that the children's tread left no marks in the sand. He glanced over his shoulder at the fire. It had burned out. When he looked back again, they had gone.
Six weeks later, small news items began popping up in the press. First, a few local tourist and parish council websites. Then the Kerry News. But eventually, even the Irish Times and Irish Examiner. Miracle of the waters. Sacred streams flow again, and once in the Irish sun. Well, well, well. It appeared that several of the sacred wells, which inexplicably dried up over the last few years, were suddenly full again. And the sacred streams were flowing. Starting with the famous St. Michael's Well overlooking Ballinskellig on the Ring of Kerry. The spot which just happened to have a stunning view over the water to the islands where Geraldo and Madrigal were freed from the stone by Kyle's rainbow fire. No one could understand it. Eminent researchers of geophysics and geology put the whole thing down to fluctuations in the water table. A shy professor of hydrogeology at Trinity College Dublin was equally clueless. Though when bullied for a press quote, she muttered something about freak shifts in the tectonic plates running northeast to southwest across Ireland. The church fathers hailed the whole thing as a modern-day miracle and held special prayer services of thanks at the site of each well and stream, with more in their churches. The additional members of congregation this attracted paid for many improvements in church roofs and gave Ireland's declining church-going numbers a welcome, if temporary, lift. Over the next 2 years, the mysterious disappearances of people from isolated farmhouses and cottages also tailed off and then stopped altogether. To date, there have been no further reports. Kyle, currently taking his A-levels, is the only person in Ireland who knows why, even though he has no idea what the children had actually done to put things right. And there is no one to ask, because to his great regret, he never did see Marvel again. Though he still thinks of him and smiles every time he sees a straggly ginger beard, someone wearing a grubby green hoodie, particularly if it's a really dirty one, or eating a peanut butter chunky. The end.